Okay, so after the curses of the snake and Adam and Chava, after they had made the choice to eat from the tree, and Hashem meets out the consequence of that decision, we now move into their lives after that event, and we start in chapter 3, verse 20. Per Gimel Toskhaf, which is just after Hashem finishes meeting out the curse to Adam, where he's going to have to work the land for a living, and he's going to have to sweat in order to earn his living, and that ultimately he will die. Ki afarata velafarata shuv, you made from dust, and ultimately you will return to dust. And then we have two very, both of them strange psukim, and we can understand them on their simple level, the same as everything that we've had so far in the story. The story can be read simply, and it can also be read metaphorically, and it can be read kabbalistically. So you'll remember, for example, when we were introduced to the snake, we took the view of some of the Rishonim that the snake was not a literal snake. The snake was that force within man, which existed only in very, very small quantities in Adam and Chava, but grew as a result of this, that force which synthesized passion with imagination. Do you remember that? We said passion on its own, desire on its own, is not dangerous. It's a powerful force and a positive force. And imagination on its own is a positive force. But when desire and imagination join, it becomes a potentially very, very destructive force. Because now you can imagine anything that you want. And once you want it, not only do you want it, but you can see it. It's there. It becomes real. And then you start pursuing it. So the reason we pursue our dreams is because we have some of the nachash in us. That doesn't mean it's a bad thing to do. It just wasn't something. Adam was not ambitious before this. There wasn't ambition. There wasn't pursuit. He was created at a very superior level, and he retained that level, and that's what he would have been. The idea of growth comes as a result of the Yetzer Hara, which is the Nachash. Growth is the desire to be more than we are. We can only be more than we are if we want to be more than we are, which means we want something we haven't got, and we can imagine it. If you can't imagine it, you also can't pursue it. So when imagination and passion come together, you've got ambition, you've got insecurity, you've got fear, all sorts of things that keep psychologists and psychiatrists very busy. All are the result of the Nachash. Without the Nachash, Adam would have been a relatively simple being, deep and pure, but not so complex as he became after his interaction with the Nachash. So bearing that in mind, that's already taking the Nachash metaphorically. And we've touched on some Kabbalistic ideas, and the piece here really needs to be understood on a more Kabbalistic level. So we're going to try and do that. Let's try and explore that and see what level of understanding we can gain from it. So let's look at these two verses, and then I'm going to give you a bit of an introduction to the ideas, and then we'll tackle the verses inside. Ephraim, good evening. Come inside. Good to see you. Thank you. Come and join us.
Pardon my tardiness.
Not at all. So, verse 20, Vayikra ha'adam shem ishto Chava. Adam called his wife Chava. Let's pause there already. What's weird about that? What's strange about that statement?
Did she have a name before?
Yeah, what did he call her before this? Didn't she have a name? All of a sudden, now he gives her a name. He was quick to give all the animals names a long time ago, but his wife gets a name now. What did he call her up till now? So the timing is strange.
Did she go by wife, maybe?
Yeah, maybe she was just wife. Because she's the mother of all living people, says the Targum. Not all life. Chava was not the mother of other forms of life. She was only the mother of human life. And that's what Chai means in this case. And so she's given this name because she's the mother of all life. And what's difficult about that statement?
She hasn't had children.
She hasn't had children yet, right? What else is difficult about it?
Chava, Chivia means a snake.
Yes, why Chava? Call her Chaya. Chaya is a nice Jewish name, why not call her Chaya? And that if she's, if it's because of Aim Kol Chai. And was he not the father of every living human flesh? So why isn't he called Chai? Chaim. They should be Chaim and Chaya, they should have been. A nice couple with two nice Jewish names. And why is she Chava? Where does Chava come from? And then Vayas Hashem Elokim la Adam ulishto kotnot or, and Hashem made for Adam and his wife clothes, tunics of leather, Vayal Bishem, and he dressed them in those clothes. Also, the timing of that is strange. Why? Very, very, very strange. So let's go a little bit deeper, a little bit more deeply into them.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sure.
When living things, all living things, that includes the animals?
No, only the living things. Meaning that as the Unculus and Targum Yonatan translates, Kihi Havat ima dechol b'nei enasha. She was the mother of all humanity. So that's, we're only talking about her as the mother of humanity, not the mother of all living things. That wouldn't be a correct translation. I don't know how the English translates it. Does it translate as living things, or does it translate it as
all the living?
All the living. So that's not a good translation. Aim Kochai is all of living being, living humans, all of human life. She becomes the mother of human life. And Hashem makes those clothes for them. So now by way of introduction to the ideas, to the Kabbalistic ideas that we'll talk about, and that is the role of, in Kabbalah we use the terms Chomer and Surah. Chomer means material, the material from which something is made, matter and the material. And surah means its design. So in everything, every object or every being has a relationship and an interface between its chomer and its surah. Everything has a chomer, everything has a surah. Everything has a form, everything has matter. It's made from something, and that's just the matter, the chomer. And then it has surah, which is its design.
When you say design, you mean its shape or its purpose?
It could be either. We'll see what we mean by design, because you're right. The very word design has that double meaning. It's a great word to use for the idea of tzura. So if we look at that further, the important thing to understand with chomer and tzura is it's like layers of an onion. So every layer is the chomer of the tzura that lies beneath it. So chomer, it's not just that there's one chomer and one surah, there are layers. So you can have an object that has, so let us take the human being. So what is the chomer of the human being? His physical body. What is the surah? The soul, the intellect, those start getting into surah. But you can unpack that into different layers of chomer and surah, where one is the surah of the chomer. We say in Kabbalah that the chomer is the clothing of the tzura. The tzura is dressed in the chomer, because the tzura on its own, design on its own, has no impact. Its design is useless if it's not attached to chomer. Now we see that in many different areas. We see that in business, just to start with. That's where we see it most simply. So it's very hard to sell a design. People are reluctant to pay for designs. Meaning, what is design? Design is an idea. You try selling ideas. People won't pay for ideas. And that's part of what has become even more evident in the modern times with the internet and so on, where ideas are free. You don't pay for ideas. On the other hand, chomer, mere matter, the commodity, is cheap. It's when you connect chomer and surah together that you get a valuable piece of a valuable product. So if you take a computer and you say, how much of the weight of the computer, say a laptop, weighs, I don't know what, 7, 8 pounds, 10 pounds, whatever they weigh, how much of that is chomer, of the mass of the computer? 99.9%. How much of its value is in the chomer?
Little.
0.1% or something. That's an amazing thing. That all the value is in the tzura. All the value is in the design. But you can't sell the design without the chomer. You've got to attach the chomer to tzura in order to do so. One of the brilliant things of Steve Jobs, one of the many brilliant things, was his the degree to which he connected chomer and tzura. So whereas Microsoft was selling what?
Tzura.
And they're only tzura. And it got to a point where it became a commodity. People weren't willing to pay for it. And Google was giving the same way stuff away free. And all of a sudden, Microsoft's in a situation where it's selling tzura. So they try and protect tzura with copyright and with patents, which helps to some degree, but it's not foolproof, and it becomes very, very difficult today and very expensive to enforce. And if you make something that's the same tzura, just a little bit different, and then it loses value. So Steve Jobs' brilliance was in understanding you've actually got to package chomer and tzura together, and you've got to do it in a way that is integrated so that it belongs together and it forms one unit, and then its value is exponentially higher. And we see that in anything. Take a work of art. How much of the value of the work of art is the chomer? Paint and the canvas, it's nothing. It's all in the tzura. But if an artist came to you and said, I've got an idea of an amazing painting and I can describe to you exactly what I'm picturing, how much are you willing to pay me for it? Nothing. Go and paint the painting and bring it. Well, if I paint the painting, all I'm adding is the cost of the materials. And you know I can paint because I've painted 25 other pictures and they've all been sold for millions. So I'm willing to sell you my idea. Not a penny. It's only when you take the tzura and you embed it in chomer that you create something that has value. And it's in the tzura where you find the differences. So if you take 25 different makes of laptops and you analyze their chomer, how different will they be from one another? Nothing. And the more you break the chomer down, the less difference there'll be. So initially there's a bit of difference, but when you break it down into the plastics and the chemicals from which the plastics are made and the metals, and you break it down into molecules, there's no difference. The more you break it down, the less value there is because everything is the same. It's in the way things are put together that the brilliance is. It's in the way things that are put together in order to accomplish an outcome, a purpose. That's that other meaning of design. When design is intelligence. With design comes intent. With design comes purpose. With design comes application. That's when value is gained, not just with the chomer. The tzura then, that the design area of the human being or of anything, that's where the difference is. That's where the depth is. That's where the greatness is. That's where the energy is. And it's so interesting. Amber, in fact, reminded me to make reference to a quote that we saw together only a few weeks ago. It's in South Africa, there's a place called the Cradle of Humankind, where they believe the oldest fossils of human-like creatures were found. And that's in South Africa, very, very close to Johannesburg, and there's a bit of a museum there and so on. And they had a quote there on one of their displays that sounds so nice and it sounds so right until you unpack it and realize it's so foolish. The quote was, we are 99.9% alike. Human beings only differ in their DNA from one another by 0.1%. Everything else about us is the same. So we must tolerate each other because there's not much difference between us, nothing to get excited about. Yeah, but what it doesn't say is that our DNA is 98.8% the same as an ape. And 66% of us is water. So then we must just tolerate the ocean because we're just the same as the ocean. The chomer, of course, from a chomer perspective, we're not that different from an ape. And if we analyzed our DNA, I don't know what it goes down to if you compare us to dogs and cats and horses. And it's probably not that much different if it's 99.9% difference for a chimpanzee, maybe it's 95 for another animal. I don't know what it is, not a lot. That's not the difference. That's like comparing two computers and saying they're identical. One can't do anything, and the other can do amazing things, because if you take the plastic, they're 99.9% the same. It's such an idiotic comment. And you find that comment up there, and that it's, you know, they got it from other places. It's not, what didn't originate on that particular exhibit. It's a foundation of liberalism. All people are equal. Yes, all people are equal because their DNA is the same. But who's talking about the DNA? That's saying like all computers are equal, so they should all sell at the lowest common denominator price. Why do some people charge more than others? Why are some people better than others? Because they are. And is that elitist? Totally. The only thing that's not elitist about it is anybody's free to be as good as they want. Not that people are born better. Yes, some people are born with capacities that others don't have. You do have a Moshe Rabbeinu. You do have a Vilna Gaon. You do have a Rambam. You and I try to be that. We're not going to make it. It's not going to happen. Some people can be athletes and some of us cannot be athletes. We are born with differences and we are born with superior design for particular purposes over others. And we've got to acknowledge that. And what we should be celebrating as human beings, is our design, not our chomer. We should be celebrating our tzurah. And in our tzurah, we are radically different from one another. In our tzurah, there's hardly anything similar between us. That's where the design comes in. So when we understand the difference between chomer and tzurah, it becomes quite interesting now. So the chomer is in the tzurah, the design is embedded in the chomer. The chomer is the external. The tzurah is much more internal. And the chomer then becomes the vehicle by which the tzurah is effective. Just as we said, an idea of a painting has no value. An idea of a computer has no value. It needs to be embedded in something physical, which brings it alive and makes it useful and gives it purpose and gives it meaning, and then it becomes powerful. So the inner part of the being, or of the object, is the design. The more chomer there is, the more layers of chomer there is, the deeper down the design is, and the harder it is to access. The harder it is to actually to perceive it, to understand it, to experience the design when it's buried under layers and layers of chomer. So the chomer, on the one hand, allows the design to be able to have impact. It amplifies the power of the design, but it also protects the design. Because the more accessible a design is, the easier it can be corrupted. So if you have, for example, let's go back to our computer. If the computer doesn't have a cover and all the little circuits and things are just on the surface, it doesn't have, it's not boxed. That's not so good because it can get damaged and it can become corrupted. The same as a painting. Some paintings are behind glass. Some are in special rooms kept at special temperatures. So that the chomer both allows for the projection of the tzura and it also protects the tzura. So now with that little bit of background, let's try and look at these psukim again and a little differently.
Where does
your neshama
fall into this?
So your neshama is deep tzura, isn't it? That's the inner layers. So if you look at the human being, there's the neshama, and around the neshama there's the ruach, and around the ruach there's the nefesh, and around the nefesh there's the guf of the human being. So the body. So each is a chomer to the tzura that lies underneath. The neshama is the essence of the tzura, and the nefesh is its chomer. And the nefesh then is the tzurah that belongs to the guf, and so or the ruach, and then the nefesh. Each layer is the tzurah of the next outer layer, which is its chomer. It's like clothing. So you take a human being, and when you see a human being, and you think of that human being, what do you see? Are you seeing their chomer or their tzurah? Seeing their chomer. And what chomer are you seeing? Let's say the body is the chomer. Are you seeing the body? Hardly. You're seeing their clothing. And what layer of their clothing are you seeing? You're seeing an outer layer. They might be wearing a coat on top of a jacket, on top of some undershirt. There could be three or four layers of clothing. And you're only seeing the outer layer. You're not even seeing the human being. And under that human being, there's a body. You're not even seeing the body of the human being, or hardly. And under that body, there's a personality, there's character. And under that, there's neshama. They're just layers and layers and layers. The neshama is buried deep under countless layers that have to be permeates it if you want to really access who the human being is. And so we have to be careful in our interaction with people to try and understand people's, and I'll talk about it as people's energy, because that's when you're accessing something deep in the human being. What you're accessing on the surface is not the human being at all. It might be, we've talked about image and identity. We talked about the difference between image and identity. Same idea. Image is chomer and identity is tzura. Identity is who I am, is my design as a human being, how I'm designed, how I think, my whole system of morality, my system of beliefs, my character, how I behave. All of that is tzura compared to my image, which is chomer. And if I'm an aligned human being, then my chomer will be aligned with who I am. It won't be completely out of kilter. There'll be some kind of alignment. And so through the chomer, then I can access something of the human, of what the human being is. If a human being adopts an image that has nothing to do with who he or she really is, then we're dealing with a lack of integrity. Then you've got an artificiality. Then it's Purim costume. It's not real image. So now let's look at these steps. Firstly, Vayikra Adam Shem Ishto, and Adam gives Chava a name. What is a name? Is that Chomer or Tzura? So it's Chomer. It's the way you're known. It's a label. It's the way you're known. It's the ultimate of Chomer. It's a very external thing.
It's
just
not
the
visible.
The name of
things.
Doesn't matter. Chomer doesn't always have to be image. Chomer through our relationships. It's how the one relates to the other. So it's the label. It's that by which the person is known. Now, the name can have tzura to it, but now as you go to deeper meanings of the name, you're going to the tzura of the name. If you're just using the name as a label, then it's just a label. But if the name is actually a manifestation of who the person is, then you're getting into the neshama of the name. But it's still chomer, it's not the person. It's just the name, it's just a word. It's the same with ideas. When we use terms to define ideas, that they're just names, they're just terms. Yes, if we choose the term carefully, then the term can reveal a lot about the essence of the idea or of the object. But we've got to understand, when we're working with names, with terms, with definitions, we're working with the chomer. That's not yet the tzura. It represents the tzura. So what's really interesting about names is that they're like icons, in the sense, like icons that we use on the in the computer. The idea of an icon is that one little thing can represent a whole complicated system that you have. So and you kind of know what that means. So if you look on your iPhone at the icon for settings, you know that you press that, you kind of go into a whole world of complicated options. But you, as soon as you see that icon, you know what it is, and you can move it around, and you can put it where you want it to be, and you're managing a whole complex system through the icon. And that's what a shame is. A shame allows you to manage complexity in a very simple way. That's what chomer does. So if I were to define, if every time I were to talk about somebody, I would need to describe them in all their detail, we would never get a sentence finished. How would you do that? So we assign the name. That's the person's name. If I were, imagine David Olchin, if each time I talked about you, I had to describe what I mean by David Olchin, who he is, where he comes from, what he believes, what he accomplishes, who his family is, every time I use his name. So we don't do that. We just assign a name. So now we know the name is that person, but that's just a name. It's not the person. And we have to be able to imagine the person. We have to be able to access the person. So chomer and tzura only becomes a concept after imagination exists, because you need imagination to attach chomer and tzura together. Without imagination, you can't attach chomer and tzura. So this only happens after Eitz Hadaat. Yes, we talked about the fact that even before Eitz Hadaat, Adam and Chava had a small speck of ego and of imagination and the things that form a yetzara, but very, very small. But now it's become very sophisticated. After eating from the tree, their imagination becomes more sophisticated. So they can think of a term and imagine the whole thing, the whole concept. They can now begin to conceptualize. That's what conceptualization means. That enables us to think. If we don't have language, we can't think. Because to think, you've got to manipulate ideas, and the ideas are too complex to manipulate if you don't have an icon. The icon is language. So So language itself becomes a chomer for the tzura, which is the idea itself. And then you can go into all the different levels of the tzura. You can't move things, you can't manipulate things, you can't do anything if there's not a chomer. So that relationship of chomer and tzura becomes very interesting. It becomes very important. Chomer and tzura, image and identity, these are all the same ideas. The idea of guf and levush, the body and the clothing, same idea. The chomer is the clothing of the body. So when you look at the person in the suit of clothes, what you see is the suit of clothes, but what you relate to is the essence of the human being. If you know the person, you're relating to something much, much deeper in that person. And the ability to access tsura is one of the many things that differentiates people. When you talk about a person who's tuned in, when you talk about a person who's sensitive, you're talking about a person who's aware. That's a person who can access tsura, not just chomer. And what is a Navi? A Navi is a person who excels at being able to access the energy forces and understand what's happening and see what's happening. It's not that he sees into the future, he sees the present. But he sees the energies, he sees the trends, he understands what's happening because he's able to access it from a neshama point of view and from a tzura point of view. And if you look at the recent parshiyot that we've been in, you take the ones we are in, you take the Parsha Truma and the Tzav and so on with the Klei HaMishkan, if you take something like the Aron, look at the beautiful design of the Aron. So the Aron is covered in gold. It's not only covered in gold on the outside, it's covered in gold on the inside. Whoever sees the inside? It was seen once when Moshe and Aaron put the Luchot inside. It was the last time it was seen, but it's covered in gold. And it's got the beautiful Zeir, and it's got the poles. And then who sees the outside of the Aron? The Kohen Gadol once a year. All that beauty is that Chomer or Tzura, that's design. Design is important not just because it looks beautiful. And you've got, there's such a misunderstanding of it. So you'll have a lot of, so to say, spiritual people who will belittle the value of design. It doesn't matter, you don't have to put money into making your house look beautiful. It's a house, you live in it, that's all. No, we live in beauty, we live in design. Hashem introduces design into the way the Kohanim dress, into the way the Beit HaMikdash is constructed, into the beauty with which the Klei HaMishkan are created. There's design, everything's got design. The world is full of design. Design is divine. Design is a creation of Hashem. Design is an expression of the divine in us. Animals don't know how to design things, and if they do, it's just instinctual. And whenever they design the same thing over and over again. They don't give something of themselves to create design. And when they do create design, it's amazing to see when birds create certain nests and they're brilliantly designed. And there are animals that do a little bit, that's all, but that's all intuitive. Human beings can choose how to design. They can design anything because they've got imagination. And once you've got imagination, you can design anything. And the design becomes very valuable because the design is tzura. Not just chomer. You have an object that's chomer. You have a house that's chomer. You put design into the house. You put color into the house. You put shape into the house. You put design into the house. It becomes a home. It has tzura. It's no longer just chomer. So Vayikra HaAdam Shem Ishto Chava. So giving her a name is already giving her an additional layer of chomer, an additional layer of material. An additional external layer. So now you can relate to her just by her name. And then you might not be relating to her at all because you would need to understand it. You can refer to her without understanding her. That's a new layer of externality. You can refer to it without understanding it. There are some things you can't refer to without understanding it. In this case, you can. So he adds that layer. And when you add a layer of externality, you make the internality more valuable. So as we do with anything, you make it deeper, you protect it, and once it's protected, it can develop. One of the big difficulties that I believe we suffer from so much today is that we don't have externality. And we don't even have the difference between externality and internality. Everything is, what did you have today? The head of the FBI saying privacy? For a long time we haven't had such a thing in the United States. Are you crazy, you guys? Are you surprised that there's no privacy? Of course there's no privacy. It's just an acknowledgement of a situation which has existed for a while. There isn't privacy. And that means the barriers that give chomer to tzura are disappearing. And when that barrier disappears, we use the term as well in Hilchot Shabbat and in other halachot of Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim, your private domain and your public domain. And what differentiates a public domain and a private domain? How do we differentiate it? With what?
Eruv.
With an Eruv. What is an Eruv? A fence.
Yeah.
A wall. I know, walls are not popular things at the moment in the United States. But that's what we do. We say we want an Eruv. And if you look at what's happened in the world recently, started Brexit and Donald Trump and all the, and many other movements in the, a lot of it is just we want a wall. It doesn't have to be a physical wall. That's not the issue. The issue, people are saying, we want a Rishut HaYachid. We want a country that we control. We want a country in which we can be ourselves. And we can let certain people in and keep certain people out, just like our homes. We want walls. People want walls. They need walls. There's an acknowledgement now that open area offices aren't working. Because people need space to be themselves. It's fine to have a marketplace, but you can't be in a marketplace all day, every day. That does damage to your psyche, because you can't develop your interiority when you're in Rishut HaRabim. You need a quiet internal place to develop your internal being. And that's why we're dealing with a society today that lacks internality. And that's why in the United States today you find it so prevalent that people can't sit quietly on their own. They've either got to be speaking or the television has to be on. They don't know what to do with aloneness, how to be on your own, how to be able to reflect and how to be able to think and how to be able to be. It's something people are finding increasingly difficult because we don't have an interiority. We don't have anything inside. And so we're always empty inside and it needs to be filled from outside because we don't feel our inside. That's what a Rishut HaYachid is for. A place where you can grow and develop your interiority so that you can feel full inside without having to be filled from the outside all the time. When you need to be filled from the outside, what is that? That's Yetzer Hara. I need other things. I need more. I need affirmation. I need kavod, kina, kavod, ta'ava. Those are the three things that motzim et ha'adam min ha'olam. It actually takes you out of life. It doesn't keep you in life because you're always pursuing something outside of you to make you feel full inside, which it can't do, because nothing outside can make you feel full inside. It can just distract you from your own emptiness. But it can't really make you feel full inside. The only way you can feel full inside is if you have a Rishut HaYachid, you have some private place in which to access yourself and develop yourself and grow yourself and exercise yourself. And individuals need that, and families need that, and countries need that, and religions need that. And one of the reasons the Meshech Chochma says that we make Kiddush on wine, and this is so interesting because it explains something that I've explained in a different way, but never as satisfactory a way as this. We know that wine is a drink that we can't... we have Stam Yenem. If a non-Jewish person touches wine, we can't use it. And there are very few things that have... There's nothing else that has that law, really. But if somebody just touches it, kosher, it's got contents. The things have to be watched. Milk has to be watched. Well, but just touch it? Where do we have? And that was the basis of the anti-Semitism of Purim, isn't that so? That's what Haman said to Achashverosh. If a fly falls into their wine, they take the fly out and they drink it. If you touch the container in which the wine is, you don't even touch the wine, they throw the wine out. You're worse than a fly to them. So that was the whole source of the anti-Semitism. And why that is, but scotch, that you can have. Vodka you can have. Mm-hmm. Why? If it's about alcohol, then it should be any alcohol. And the Meshech Chochma just says in an aside on another issue, talking about why wine is used for the Arba Kosot and Pesach. And he talks about the fact that on Pesach we're talking about Geulah, about taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, the separation of Jew from Egyptian. And wine is the drink that makes us conscious of our separateness. Why? Because of the halakha. It's really very interesting. It's not the other way around. People sometimes think the reason we're so strict about wine is because we use it for Kiddush. No, says the Meshech Chochma, the reason we use wine for Kiddush is because it has certain laws of separateness attached to it, and it reminds us of what Kiddushah is. Kiddushah is separateness. And today, separateness is not a nice word. Yeah, not a nice word. No walls, no separation, and no separateness. Not a nice word. But separateness is kedusha. You can't get into the qualitative area if you don't have separateness. Separateness doesn't mean you don't respect other people. Separateness doesn't mean you don't get on with other people. It just means that you know the boundaries, that you're not other people. You are you. And that it's not true that although 99.9% of you is like other people, that's not the 99.9% that counts. What counts is the 0.1%, which is your tzura. And for your tzura to develop, you need interiority. And for interiority to develop, you need time and place that is secluded. And we have to be able to do that. We have to know how to achieve that. So here we have this whole introduction of the barrier. We've given, by giving Chava a name, she's given an extra wall, an extra fence that gives her more space for interiority. Now I want to take that, we're dealing with this Kabbalistically, so it's hard, but you're so good at this, so I'm just going to go as far as I can go until I see blank faces and then I'll stop. The term Chava, the Balaturim, has a really interesting twist on. And he says, Al Shem Shemechava. It's not Chayash, it's not because Mechava. What does Mechava mean?
Chavaya.
Chavaya is experience, isn't that right? To have an experience. But and what is Lechavot?
Well, Mechava is when you express something.
To express. She is the mother of expression. And then the Baal HaTurim brings a very controversial Gemara. Isn't today Women's Day or something?
Yeah.
So the Baal HaTurim brings Yud Kavin Sicha Yardu Lo'olam. 10 measures of conversation were given to the world. Tish'a Natlu Nashim. Women took 9/10. 9/10 of the art of conversation. They are the masters of conversation. Men are 1/10 as good as women at expressing themselves. You know, you look at that Chazal and you say it's a little bit sexist and controversial. Sorry?
Is that what it means? That they're better at speaking?
Sure. Absolutely. What do you think it means? They speak a lot. They speak 10 times more than men. So it's that as well, because they're better at men than men, they speak. But if you just think of the conversations between men and women, how often do you, why don't you tell me what you're feeling? Why don't you tell me what you're thinking? Now, who says that when I say that? I'm not saying man or woman. But in your mind, who's saying that? Man or woman? They're always women. Why don't you tell me what, you never saw a man saying, why don't you tell me what you think? She does. And because she's 9 times better at communication than a man. And that's how, once you know that, and then you get these books of women are from Mars, what men are from Mars, Venus. Like, oh, all of a sudden they've discovered something. And Chazal, of course. And this is the one area where there's such a difference. But now what becomes interesting, hold that thought. So Chava means she's experiential, so she knows how to create experience, and that's connected with communication. Because what is communication? Communication is not just information. You don't need communication for information. Animals can pass information to one another even though they can't speak. You don't need words for communication of information. You need words for the communication of thoughts, of feelings, of experience. That's when it gets artistic. What is a work of art? You're listening to a work of music, or you're looking at a piece of art. It's what it makes you feel, not a communication of information. That's not art. And the art of conversation, which what the Chazal is talking about, is the ability to convey experience, to be able to impact how another person can feel, to be able to inspire another person. That's what conversation really is designed for, to be able to impact the feelings of another person. And women can do that much more effectively. Men talk information. And he'll talk and talk, and then the woman will still say, but I still don't know what you're feeling. How much more can I tell you? I've told you how I feel. I don't get it. I don't feel it. What am I supposed to... They don't even understand what they're talking about to each other. It's just so different in trying to understand, because that's what communication really means, is to communicate a feeling. And only humans can do that. That's what the Ruach Mamalala is to be able to inspire other human beings with feelings. And you can inspire people with almost any feeling, positive or negative. And we can use the power of conversation and speech to do that. So hold that for a moment, and let's look at another take on what this is. And I think Ivy, you mentioned it. Vayikra Adam Shem Ishto Chava. The Zohar and the Medrash says Chava comes from the word Chivya, which is snake. So not such a nice word now. Aim Kochav. Everything. The literal word is all very nice. The way we normally understand this verse is very complimentary to the woman. She's the mother of all living beings. She's called Chava. She's master of expression. She's master conversationalist. All very complimentary. But there's another layer of meaning, which is Chivya. She's the snake, and the Orach Chaim says that's what it means when it says, how do you then read it? And he called her snake because she's the mother of all living beings. So says the Orach Chaim, no, that second part explains why he didn't call her Chivya. Why he called her Chava? Because, says the Kleyach, she's also the mother of all living things. You don't just call her snake. That's not her being. That's not her essence. That's an element of her essence, but it's not the essence, the total essence. She's also Enkel Chai. So he merges two words together, Chivya and Chaya, which the Kleyaka says was her name before, and he modifies her name from Chaya to Chava, so as to have the Vav, which is kind of a snake-like letter, isn't it? It's a long, straight letter, and he introduces the snakiness into the Chaya, and now that's the woman. So now let's try and put those two ideas together. What is the relationship between the snakiness and the conversation? Well, for that we have to go to the next sentence. And the next sentence doesn't belong where it is. So according to the Medrash, it belongs way back when they were before they even ate from the Eitz Hadaat. I'm not going to go into that, but for the sake of artistic understanding, for the moment, you'll see when we finish, it doesn't matter where you position it, but for the moment, let us switch these two psukim around. And I'm taking the liberty of doing that, as I say, because Chazal do say it doesn't belong here. And that happens often in the Torah. There are reasons why certain things are put in place. They're not necessarily narratively consecutive. There could be other reasons for it. So we can assume for the moment that we switch these psukim around. So let us say God made Adam and his wife Kutnot Or, and it also makes sense because it says, it doesn't say, and God made for Adam and Chava. So she's not Chava yet when this verse takes place. So he first makes them Kutnot Or, first makes them clothing of leather, and then Adam calls her snake. Why? Yes. Look at the Targum Yonatan, and it says the following. Va'avad Hashem Elokim la'adamu le'intetei levushim, dikar. And Hashem made Adam and his wife a couturier clothing, just the most amazingly designed, beautiful clothes. This is not just an old tunic. This is levushin diakar, very expensive, classy, beautiful, high fashion, high design clothes. I know it doesn't fit into the kind of regular frum picture of design doesn't matter and fashion doesn't matter and all these things doesn't matter. You know, not everything that from people believe, the Torah believes. Sometimes they're different. Different religions sometimes. And I can only teach the Torah, and the Torah puts a lot of emphasis on design. It just does. We see it over and over again. And what was this clothing made from? Not just from any old leather. Min meshach chivya, snake skin. Now why does he call her Mrs. Snake? Because she looks like a snake all of a sudden. She's wearing snake. And you can imagine her, this very feminine woman, and her ability to move and her seductiveness and in a really attractive snake outfit. And he looks at her and he says, you're not Chaya. You're Chivya. Or you're Chava, at least. You are a snake. Not in a negative, not in an entirely negative thing. We'll see why. Which snake skin is it? Mena al meshach bisreiha, the ashlach minei, the snake skin which the snake shed, because snakes can shed their skins. So this Nachash shed his skin, and that was the skin that Hashem used to make clothing for Adam Chava. Al meshach bisreihen, on their skin, chalaf tufreihon de ishtalchu, they also shed their skin. They used to have a skin as well, and it was also made from scales. They had a pearly, a very beautiful pearly skin, and we're told the only thing left of that are our nails. So that it was apparently very, very beautiful, and they shed their skin after the chet. And the snake shed its skin after the snake. And Hashem takes the snake skin and dresses them in the snake skin. So now let's get back into that's metaphorical and artistic. We now understand that the verses, why they're connected, why it's at this point that he gives her a name, why Hashem makes them the clothes. The whole thing starts making sense. Hashem, but now let's take it a little bit more kabbalistically and say. So Chava adopts the levush, the chomer of the snake. And what is the chomer of the snake? If we go back to our original understanding of the snake, when we say it's the Yetzer Hara. So her, the outer layer of Chava and of humanity, therefore, now becomes the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara becomes the levush, becomes the outer layer, the clothing of the tzura, which is the inner. It's not that you've got this terrible thing, the Yetzer Hara, there, and this wonderful thing here, and you must choose this, not that. No, we are an integrated human being. We consist of both. When we treat the Yetzer Hara as our clothing, it works well. When the Yetzer Hara becomes our essence, that's like looking at a person's clothing and thinking, that's the person. There's this very, very interesting book that's been written just a few years ago by this Swedish guy, Carl Ove, something, Swedish guy. Become the Rage. Anybody read 5 volumes called My Struggle, Mein Kampf, My Struggle? And it's become a huge bestseller, especially among young people. And it's a very, very unusual book. But just yesterday on the plane, I was reading a section where he talks about his father's just died. And it's a whole long pages and pages and pages where he examines old age and death just incredibly beautifully, but very slowly. And he's been to see his father's body, and he's all shaken up by that, and now he's staying in his grandmother's house, and it's where his grandfather died, and it's where his father died, and there's death all over the place. And he lies down to sleep, and he sees his suit hanging. There's no real closet there, so he kind of hangs his suit up on a hook in the room, and the suit is kind of moving in the wind. And he can't fall asleep. He just sees an image. There's like a human in the suit. He's looking at a levush, but the levush is taking on human form. When the levush takes on human form, when the chomer takes on human form, then we're in Yetzirah territory. When we look at our bodies and we think that's us, when we look at the externality that we live with, and that becomes our interiority, that's Yetzirah. That's when it becomes destructive. But if we treat the Yetzer Hara as our outer garments, so let's understand how that works. So let's look at elements of the Yetzer Hara. So one element of the Yetzer Hara is ambition. Right? Ambition can be incredibly destructive, and yet ambition makes the world go round. So what is when ambition becomes the essence of who we are, it becomes destructive. When passion becomes the essence of who we are, it becomes destructive. When pride becomes the essence of who we are, it becomes destructive. But if we're using those as kelim, we're using those as instruments of impact, then it becomes different. Then we become integrated human beings who take our interiority and use our levush to amplify it and make it effective. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the trappings of power, so for example, even if you take something so simple as power dressing, even in this informal day and age, they still use power dressing. If you're having a meeting with an important client and you need to take a position of influence and power, you dress for it. That's complete levush. That's complete exteriority. But you're using it in order to have greater impact. If you dress inappropriately for an occasion, what's the difference? The tzura is still the same. So if the same human being turns up, you're going to a really important celebratory dinner party at the White House, and you turn up in your swimsuit. Asl me, you invited me, you didn't invite my suit. Does it make a difference if I come with my, I'm here, what do you care? It doesn't work like that. The levush is important. And the appropriate levush in order to give yourself impact. Otherwise you diminish your impact by diminishing your levush. As unimportant as the chomer is, it's incredibly important. It's the body of the computer that makes it work. Take it out and just use the wire design, or just give the circuitry design. You can't do anything with it. It has no value. And so with everything we do, when we talk about the Yetzer Hara, only when we separate them out and we pursue the externality as an end in itself, that's when it becomes Yetzer Hara. But when the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer HaTov are integrated into one human being who uses them both in an integrated way to have impact and creativity, that's very different. So in the case of Chava, she's now given this, they're both given this external suit, which is their image. So it's now all the externality, and that's what the snake was. The snake was all externality. That's all he was. There was no substance to him. He was just in imagination. That's the way we learned the snake. He was imagination and desire. So there's nothing there. It's just it's just an illusion. And
what
is sorry?
What does he get to wear?
What is he?
Adam. What does he get to wear?
Same. He's also in the
same.
Also, but, yeah, but he's not looking at himself. He doesn't have a mirror. He just sees her, so he calls her Chava. And she's very wise. She doesn't call him Chavia back and say, "You're also a snake." She keeps quiet. That part of the art of conversation is to know when to keep quiet. And she does that brilliantly. She just keeps quiet. And so that he does. And then now let's go back to the Baal HaTurim. So when the Baal HaTurim says she's a master conversationist, so now, and here you'll understand the essence of the Mars and the, was it Jupiter? What was that? Venus. You'll understand the essence of the Mars and Venus. So now, she's master of conversation, but that conversation, is it Chomer or Tzura? It's Chomer. So she's using conversation as a way of projecting herself, like a man uses power. Right? That's it's something external. It's an instrument. So a man power dresses, a man uses all, manipulates and gets into that all. She uses conversation as her way of projecting herself and having impact, of being able to influence the world around her. She uses conversation. So now the biggest mistake the man can make is to relate to the conversation as if it's the tzura. And how often will you hear a woman saying something and a man responding to what she says, and he really gets it. He really gets into trouble for that. And she says, "But that's what you said." "Don't you understand what I mean? How can I understand what you mean? That's what you said." A woman can get angry and can express herself in an angry way. And he takes the words and assumes the words are what it's all about. Instead of seeing the words are just the lavush. The words are just the dressing up of something deeper, of something interior that could be hurting, that could be causing sadness, that could be causing anger. And he's not able to penetrate beyond that and realize that for the woman, it's just lavush. It's like for the man, so he goes off to work, and she says, "But you don't care about your family, you're always at work." And he says, it's not even me that's at work, it's just a lavush, it's just a tool. It's a way to support the family, it's a way to impact the world. That's not where my love is, that's not where my thoughts are, that's not where my connection is. And she says, "How am I supposed to know?" Same kind of thing, how am I supposed to know? We have to develop the capacity to be able to see through the lavush and understand what lies behind it. So that snake skin, metaphorically, is her ability to have conversation, her ability to create experience. And just as you were to look at the snake skin and know she's not a snake, she's Chava, she's Ein Kol Chai. That's who her essence is. Yes, she might look like a snake because she has some of that externality that the snake brings into existence. But at the end of the day, she's Ein Kol Chai. That's who she is in her essence. And so she needs to understand what of the man is also just, and women are perhaps better at that than men. Women will know it's just ego stuff. Kind of let them have their toys, let them do their thing. She doesn't value it, but he needs it, so it's okay. It's also the ability to see through that barrier and understand that inside it exists a different human being from what you see on the outside with all the layers of defense. And we've got to understand the layers of defense and be able to see through those layers of defense. And the last piece that I want to touch on in these two sentences is why she's Ein Kol Chai. And again, the Orach Chaim brings a concept which we find often in many different places. We find it again in the Parshiot now, the Parsha of Truma, for example, where V'yikhu Truma, the idea of taking Truma, and the Zohar says, whenever it says lakach, when that word is used, it means a purchase, it means an acquisition. V'yikach always means an acquisition, which means the investment of money. and the truma, the donation which is given to the Beit HaMikdash, has to cost. And the Zohar says the spiritual power that a mitzvah has, which has been paid for, is far higher than a mitzvah that has not been paid for. And the more you pay for a mitzvah, the more valuable the mitzvah is. So some people get upset when they auction aliyot and shul. It's not because, well, it didn't start, I don't know why some shuls do it, but it's not because they're trying to raise money. There are easier ways to raise more money than, and in some shuls it's sweet, like they're poor people and they'll give pennies, they'll give a dollar or two for an aliyah, it doesn't matter. And in one shul that I used to go to in Toronto, you used to buy an aliyah and give the aliyah to someone else. It was not something, it wasn't for one's own ego, you used to actually then donate the aliyah, having bought it. It's not about raising money, it's about wanting to pay for your aliyah. It's so different. You have some people that get, oh, now they want money from me as well. And then other people that say, I don't want an aliyah that I haven't paid for, because a mitzvah doesn't have the same power when it's not paid for. Because money is power, money is energy. We work for it, it comes from our essence. That's where our money comes from. It comes from our tzura, not just from our chomer, it's not just our labor. We apply our minds to earn our money. And it becomes something we put our sweat and blood into, as Hashem says to Adam. Now we take that sweat and blood, that's the idea of a korban. And part of where we're told, where Adam is told, you'll go back to the dust from which you came. And you'll remember we talked in the beginning when Adam was created, what dust was he created from? Where was the dust that he taken from which he was created? Do you remember?
The mountain.
Which mountain?
Where
the Beit HaMikdash is. So Ve'ala Farta Shuv is, you'll go back to the Beit HaMikdash to bring sacrifices, to take your sweat and labor that you've translated into money, with that money buy a sacrifice and bring it back to me, so that there's a whole circular activity. So that the meaning of your work, of your sweat and labor, is to be able to invest in your spirituality. That's why we work. That's why Hashem designed the world after the Chet of Adam HaRishon in such a way that we have to work so that we can invest sweat and blood into our money, so that we can use our money for mitzvot, which then get supercharged because of the energy that the money gives that mitzvah. It's not that the money is material and the mitzvah is spiritual and why. That's such a Christian idea, that they're two separate things. No, money is the force of human effort, the force of human intellect. That's what money is, packaged into an object that then becomes tradable, so that you can now buy mitzvot with it. You can give tzedakah, you can do chesed, you can do hachnasat orchim, you can buy a sefer Torah, you can invest in learning, you can educate your children. Those are the things we're meant to do with mitzvot. Yes, you've got to do other things as well, but the real reason we do it is to be able to invest in mitzvot, because that supercharges the mitzvah. So now says the Orach Chaim, why at this point is she called Eim Kol Chai? Because she's just been told she's going to pay the price of having children. She's going to suffer the pains of labor and of upbringing the child. She's going to be investing in the child much more than he will be. And the cost of that investment gives her the ownership. She's the mother of life, not he. And it's interesting from here that the Orach Chaim says, Kivan shenigzar aleha leled be'etzev, since she has been given the decree that she's going to give birth in sadness and pain, Lezeh kara la chava, that's why he called her chava, v'lo kara achavya, and not snake, lirmoz ki hi aita im kol chai, to teach that she is the mother of all living humans, kivan shehi sovelet ha'etzavon shel hayrayon v'shel leida, since she suffers the difficulty of pregnancy and birth, la ye'ata lehityaches im kol chai. She is the proper being to be termed the mother of every living flesh. And I see from this, just as an aside, and I'm not giving a halachic decision on it, but I feel very strongly, and here's a strong support, that in all these cases of surrogate motherhood and so on, the woman who gives birth is the mother. It has nothing to do with who the DNA comes from. Motherhood is not about chemicals. Motherhood is not about the 99.9%. Motherhood is about the 0.1%. And the 0.1% comes from the mother who suffered. That's the mother that can give that child the love and the attention and the direction that the child needs. And normally they go together, the DNA and the motherhood goes together. But you see here too, she's called Aim because she gives birth. That's what makes her a mother. She's not a mother because the eggs were hers. That's not what makes her a mother. It's not about DNA. And so this Chava is understood by Adam in her essence to have these two beings, motherhood and wifehood. She's the companion who brings experience and communication and sophistication and everything that goes with that into the relationship, and she's also the mother of the children that come out of the relationship. So when he calls her Chava, that combination of, don't forget, the snake was the most seductive being that existed. It was incredibly attractive, and we saw the seductive power. So you bring all of the sensuality of the snake at that time, whatever he was, that Chivya together with Chaya, and you create Chava. That's a name that is not only an externality, it's not only a label, it's a name that actually describes the very essence of the tzura, the very essence of the form, of the design, of the intention and purpose of who Chava and women who come from her are meant to be. So as it turns out, that's a very appropriate shiur for Women's Day.
Robert, question?